I've been an environmentalist professionally throughout my life, and I've been an environmental regulator throughout my life. You cannot do that job without being brutally honest. I'm also a scientist, and science is predicated on being honest and open. And it seems to me that we won't achieve anything unless we are absolutely honest. And that's honest about the dangers and the threats of climate change, but it's being absolutely honest about the mitigation and the adaptation that we need to put in place to address climate change. And honest about the challenges of that, but absolutely honest as well about the great benefits and the potential good things that will come out of it for everyone, for every sector and for every individual. It's the only way we're going to get that buy-in. I mean, I've detected in all the engagement meetings we've had so far a degree of cynicism that this action plan might not be delivered. So that's inevitably a challenge to the politicians here on the island, but as I've said in each of the meetings, it's also a challenge to the people, all the people on the island, to give the support to those politicians when they adopt, when they assume that leadership role. And from time to time, they'll need to take hard decisions, and they need to be able to rely on that continuing public support, that the vision we're aiming for is valid and that the support will be continuing through for the next 30 years. So it's a challenge to the politicians, it's a challenge to the people of the island, but it's a challenge to me personally as well, that the recommendations I make in the final report are understandable but also workable, and to make recommendations on the kind of governance, the long-term delivery of the action plan in such a way that it gives everyone the trust and confidence that those actions are being taken and continue to be taken for decades into the future.
With this dedicated team now established, where does the island rank in comparisons now to other nations in its efforts to address the climate crisis?
That's a very hard question to answer. I would couch it in terms of the potential. And I think the potential for this island to take dramatic action on climate change is possibly second to none. This island has enormous resources, and that's resources, environmental resources in terms of renewable energy generation, but it has enormous resources in terms of the people, some of the people I've been meeting. It has great resources politically because of the levers that are available to be pulled here on the island, and classically it has great resources in terms of the financial institutions involved here and the potential to crowd in private investment to support the developments in the future. So the potential, I think, is second to none.
The reason I ask that is obviously, of course, we're living in an age where, you know, Trump's America dominates the news headlines. What do you make of his statements on the Paris Accord being a job-killing agreement?
Surely we have the self-confidence to believe differently.
Early in the month, Sir David Attenborough was giving evidence to a UK parliamentary committee. And one of the key statements that came out of that was, we cannot act radical enough. Is that a sentiment you agree with?
Yes, but I'm also a pragmatist, having been an environmental regulator working in the public sector for nearly all my life. It would be great to be radical and revolutionary, but that's not really how the world works. We need to come up with an action plan, as I said earlier, that is workable and fundable, and we shouldn't always just look at the costs of taking climate action. We should look at the costs of not taking climate action. And I think the penny, and it's not a penny really, it's trillions of dollars, the penny is beginning to drop that unless action is taken now, the massive investments around the world in infrastructure are potentially going to be seriously damaged over the next decades by the impacts of climate change unless we start reversing that trend now. So there has to be a degree of pragmatism comes into what may be quite a radical or idealistic agenda.
For some, a response to the climate emergency needs to evoke that World War II kind of spirit, where an entire nation is galvanised and mobilised and singing from the same hymn sheet, effectively. If the climate emergency is humanity's greatest existential threat we've ever faced, why aren't more people concerned?
Yeah, I think there's a very valid argument in that. And if you look at the way the US economy in particular, there's been a lot of studies done that responded to World War II when they entered it partway through. One third of their GDP was turned round in the space of 2 years to the war effort. That shows the massive scale of transition that is possible when the ambition and the aspiration is there. And interestingly, the USA benefited for decades afterwards from that transition because it inspired innovation in many areas of kind of industrial and commercial development, which they traded on for years and years afterward, giving them a leading world domination in the global economy. But interestingly, it also inspired greater social coherence, which brought a new dimension to activity within the US and again gave them a firm footing for commercial, industrial, financial domination for the succeeding decades. So it can be done if the will and the ambition is there, and there are many, many benefits, co-benefits, multiple benefits that will spring out of it.
But obviously with climate change, I suppose it isn't that tangible foe like Nazi Germany was. It's more complex, it's multifaceted, isn't it?
It is, but it is a foe, there's no doubt about it, and it's a foe that must be defeated. The sooner the better.